Right now, I'm joined by June Woolerton, who is the author behind The Mysterious Death of Catherine Parr. Hi, June. How are you doing?
Hi, Anna. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Really good, thanks. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, what is your background in literature and history?
I have been researching and writing about history for a very, very, very long time. I won't say how long, that'll give away how old I am. But Catherine Parr has been a real passion of mine for about 10 years. I read a book while I was on a train between London and Bristol about 10 years ago, which just had this tiny, tiny, tiny little piece about her in there, saying that there were rumours at the time of her death that she'd been murdered by her fourth husband, Thomas Seymour. And it absolutely triggered my interest in her. And I started trying to find out everything I could about her. And it's all come together in this book, built around what is her very mysterious death.
Yeah, because I think if you get your history on Henry VIII by the famous rhyme, divorce, beheaded, died, divorce, beheaded, survived, which is, I think, what most people know most about Henry VIII, is that she sounds like the success story. She's the one that survives and manages to beat the tyrants in a way. So it's not as clear cut as that rhyme makes it seem, correct?
Exactly. She's kind of, in a way, we've almost written her out of history, as you say, as the survivor. So we know poor Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard came to terrible, tragic ends. And Catherine of Aragon was had her reputation smashed to pieces by Henry right across Europe in the middle of the 16th century. So we have these amazing, amazing stories handed down to us from Tudor times of these women with extraordinary lives. And Catherine's almost like the kind of addendum, you know, there she is, she survived, and you just presume she went off and lived in a lovely castle, and you never really hear very much about her. But actually, the 18 months after Henry's death, because she only outlived him by 18 months, were absolutely packed with drama and intrigue, and they culminate in a really, really strange set of circumstances that lead to her death, her burial, and then, bizarrely, she's a Queen of England. Her tomb is lost and not discovered again until the 18th century, where poor Catherine is dug up over and over again, and rather gruesomely ends up becoming the third of Henry's wives to be beheaded because someone chops her head off after she's dead.
That's crazy. That's absolutely mad. I've got so many questions, I don't really know where to start. But you mentioned in the summary that her body was embalmed. So she had an elaborate embalming process that happened to her body. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's one of the really strange things. I think there's a lot around all Tudor history because we don't have that much documentation left to us about any part of that history. But one of the really strange things that can't be explained about Catherine's death with the ordinary telling of her story is why her body was so heavily prepared for burial. She died in Sudley Castle in Gloucestershire, which is the most beautiful, beautiful castle in the middle of a rural idyll, surrounded by fields, absolutely glorious. And she died on September the 5th in one of the rooms there. And her burial place is St. Mary's Church at Sudley. You can still see her tomb today. It's about 150 metres from the room in which she died. So they didn't carry Catherine very far, but they covered her in 14 layers of heavily waxed cloth and then sealed her body in a lead casket that was so tight no air could get in. And when they finally did rediscover her body, over 200 years later, it was so well embalmed that she was perfectly preserved. She was exactly as she was on the day that she buried her. And this is a really strange set of circumstances. You expect royal bodies to be heavily embalmed because they're usually carried hundreds of miles around the country to a big grand chapel for a big royal burial. Catherine died on September the 5th, 1548. And on September the 7th, 1548, just 48 hours later, she was carried a few metres to a chapel where a very unusual funeral took place. And she was buried. And I think that's one of the really pressing questions about her death is why this Queen of England was firstly buried in a tiny chapel just around the corner from the room that she died in, but also why they basically spent the 48 hours between her death and her burial embalming her body for such a short journey.
And who would have been the people making that process? Who were the people around her after she died?
Again, it's really, really odd because because when Henry VIII died, Catherine had every expectation of ruling England. We have to bear in mind that Catherine Parr, our boring old survivor that mm-hmm. we just think lived in a lovely country house, knitting or sewing or walking around as we see in all these films, she had actually ruled England in her own right, and she was the last queen consort to do that. So Henry VIII thought so well of her that when he decided to go off campaigning in France, just after their marriage, he made her his regent. So Catherine of Aragon had been a regent for him, and Catherine Parr was a regent for him. He hadn't made even Anne Boleyn regent in his place, but he thought Catherine Parr was such a good politician that she could rule his beloved England for him. And she had every expectation that were he to die before his only son, who became Edward VI, was an adult, that she would rule England again, and her enemies thought she would as well. So they hatched a plot just before Henry died, and she almost ended up in the Tower of London and almost lost her head. She actually managed to talk Henry out of having her arrested and having her executed. So she was a clever woman. She was a player. But then after Henry died and the will was read, she found out she had no power at court at all. The power had passed to Edward VI's maternal family, the brother of his mother, Jane Seymour. So she promptly married another brother, Thomas Seymour. And this is the circle that she was living in at the time of her death, a really potent, heady mix of political ambition, of people jostling for control of a boy king. Edward VI was only 10 when Catherine died. And so people were fighting to control him because he controlled England and all of England's holdings, and they wanted that power. And she was one of those people. So the last 18 months of her life were very far from this calm, placid triumph of survival. She was in the thick of Tudor politics. And we have to add into that as well a sex scandal, because Henry had two daughters, Mary and Elizabeth, and Catherine had helped get them back into the succession. Until Henry married Catherine Parr, those two women were on the sidelines. He had no intention of ever including them in the succession to the English throne, and she persuaded him otherwise. But Elizabeth was still relatively young. She was 13 at the time of Henry's death, and Catherine took her into her household. She was her stepmother, but Thomas Seymour, Catherine's fourth husband, was also interested in Elizabeth. And in 1548, when Catherine discovered that she was expecting a baby with Thomas Seymour, he began to turn his attentions to Elizabeth. And there was a massive scandal that ended up with Elizabeth being sent out of the house. So the backdrop to Catherine's last few months is anything but calm. There's politics and passion and all kinds of drama going on.
It's all very salacious, isn't it?
It is, yes. I mean, she's got quite a tale to tell.
And how old would she have been during all of this?
Well, she was, when Henry died in 1547, Catherine was about 35, 36. I mean, records are such, no one had to record when people were born. And she was actually relatively lowly in terms of royal blood. You know, we think of kings marrying princesses, but Catherine was actually a relatively low-born noblewoman, kind of like Anne Boleyn and Jane Seymour had been. Henry wasn't interested in royal marriages per se. He married often for love, and there was often a political element to it as well, but in a very different way. So Catherine had kind of worked her way up the social ladder to become Queen of England. But that means that we don't have really, really good records of the date of her birth. We think it's about 1512. So by the time she found herself as the widowed Queen of England, the Dowager Queen of England, she was about 35, 36 years old. So when she married Thomas Seymour, which she did within a few months of Henry dying, which was a controversial and dangerous move, she was about 36. So by the time she had what was her only baby in 1548, she was considered to be an old first-time mother. She would have been a risk.
Yeah, absolutely. But she'd been written out of power, you mentioned earlier on. So why would she still have been seen as a threat? Or, you know, what you're saying there is making it sound like she's still in the thick of things. She is potentially a threat. But how does that add up?
Well, I mean, you've got to remember the Tudor court's quite small and it's quite incestuous. So we've already had like three Seymours come into the mix. We know that Henry VIII's third wife was Jane Seymour. She was one of a large family. So one of her brothers, Edward Seymour, has taken control of Edward VI. And another brother, Thomas Seymour, has become Catherine Parr's wife. But they're in a very tight-knit circle. And Thomas Seymour was agitating for power from the very moment that Henry died. And he never, ever stopped. He never, ever gave up. One of the reasons he was so interested in Elizabeth Princess Elizabeth, Henry's daughter with Anne Boleyn, was that she was a Protestant princess and Edward VI was a Protestant king. And the line of succession to this boy king's throne was Mary, Henry's daughter with Catherine of Aragon, who was Catholic, and then Elizabeth, his daughter with Anne Boleyn, who was Protestant. And the power play going on was as much around religion as it was about things like the economy or the laws. People were passionate about religion at this time. And so Elizabeth was the prize. You know, if you had this Protestant princess in your power, then if Edward didn't live that long, she was in some ways more likely to succeed if it came down to kind of moving the chess pieces around the board. So Catherine was stepmother. She had possession of this Protestant princess and people were gathering around her. But you have to remember that Catherine had been at the very, very heart of Henry's court. She ruled England for him and she was at his side through some of the biggest decisions of the last few years of his reign. So she was a really dangerous person to have around because she knew what Henry had been like. She knew how Henry had ruled and she also knew what all of the men who were fighting to have control of England at the time were like. She knew their strengths and she knew their weaknesses. And she was an absolutely vital cog in this very complicated wheel that's turning England at the time.
It's really interesting, I suppose, that Henry VIII should choose to marry her as well. Because to me, I always thought he had a bit of a reputation of, I know that the women that he married were obviously clearly fairly ambitious, or at least players behind somebody else who's ambitious on their part. But he had gave the impression that he liked the prettiest one, maybe the youngest one. But here in his last wife, he's picked someone who's got a head on her shoulders, who's a bit more mature, who can think for herself. So that's quite interesting. And I'm interested in her choice to bring her stepchildren, her stepdaughters, back into the fold. You say that that was her decision. Could you shed a bit more light onto why you think she might have done that? Would it have been purely political or was she big-hearted? Did she want to see the family reunited?
I think it was a bit of both. Catherine, in many ways, was kind of a return to form for Henry. So his first wife was Catherine of Aragon, who was easily the most royal of all his brides. And in a way, as a teenage king, he chose to marry someone with royal blood because it kind of bolstered his reputation. You have to remember he was the second Tudor king and the Tudors were kind of usurpers. They'd won the throne at the Battle of Bosworth. They were still proving that really they should be in charge. They were great administrators, great legislators, but there were still plenty of people kind of looking at them thinking, well, are you really royal enough to be king? So Catherine of Aragon really bolstered Henry's kind of regal reputation, but she was a great politician in her own right. And he would have seen that because she lived in England for a number of years before he married her. And then, of course, Anne Boleyn, the great politician. And then he kind of goes into this kind of dip where he marries Jane Seymour. And we don't know enough about Jane Seymour to say whether she was a political player or just kind of a mousy wife on the side. Her early death kind of takes away her power. But obviously, Anne of Cleves and Catherine Howard had been inconsequential in the power play, and Catherine Howard was definitely a puppet. Catherine Parr's kind of return to that form of looking for someone with a political brain who can match Henry and who can help him reign. So in a way, she's kind of a reflection back, but she'd been married twice already by the time she married Henry. This is the other really surprising thing about Catherine Parr. She had four husbands. She's the most married Queen of England ever. So she had had stepchildren. Her second husband had two children that she'd taken under her wing and she'd looked after. And she was a really practical woman. We have to remember that life in the 16th century was much shorter. People had a much shorter life expectancy, and she was a great forward planner. So when she'd married her second husband, she was planning how his succession went on, and she kind of brought that pattern of behavior with her to Henry's court. But of course, she's planning a far bigger succession. And I think she was sharp enough to realize that yes, he longed for this son and he finally had this prince to succeed to his throne, but there were no other male heirs anywhere. And we know that there was expectation that Catherine and Henry would have a child. They certainly continued to try for a family all the way through his reign. It, of course, never happened. But Catherine was shrewd enough to realise that actually you need to start putting people in positions of succession, because in all likelihood, the succession is going to be female. Henry had no other male heir apart from Edward. There weren't even nephews or cousins bouncing around that might take the throne. So she was a very, very sharp political player. And I think the one thing to remember about Catherine is she was also passionate about religion in a way that it's quite difficult to understand from the 21st century point of view. She was really, really, really zealous about the Protestant faith, about the new faith, about saving people through faith. And so for her to get Mary and Elizabeth locked into the succession, it means you've got a bit more control over how that element of English life might develop too.
Absolutely. It's so fascinating. And without, so I'm just looking at the time there, without giving any huge spoilers away, about obviously you're investigating the death of Catherine Parr, the mystery that surrounds it. What do you hope the readers will take away from the end of the book? Have you got definitive answers for them? Or what do you expect people to take away at the end of it?
I hope it gets lots more people to ask how Catherine Parr really died, because I don't think the accepted wisdom that she died in childbirth on the 5th of September and was buried 2 days later and faded into history, I don't think that stands up to any burden of proof. I think there's as much evidence that Catherine died of plague or was murdered as there is that she just died of childbirth. She herself, in the only written testimony we have of her death, accused her last husband of hastening her end. She chucked this accusation out there that because of him, she was in a precarious situation. And I hope that people take a step back and look at this amazing woman who's one of the most fascinating figures in English history, who became a really, really convenient corpse, and ask, you know, how powerful and influential was Catherine, and why would she be a kind of enemy of the state that was growing up around Edward VI? And just take a couple of step backs and ask whether what we really think we know about Catherine Parr is true.
Well, June, thank you. This has been absolutely fascinating, and I can't wait to see the Netflix series that gets created on the back of this book, because it really has all of the elements that it needs to create something fascinating on TV. But also, the book sounds brilliant. The Mysterious Death of Catherine Parr. You can pick it up on the TRE bookshop or Google it and get it from normal good bookshops. June, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Anna.